Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back with a brand new episode, guys. Of course, recapping UFC Noche, otherwise known as UFC 306. A lot of crazy stuff happened at the Sphere this weekend. I was able to catch the entire card, much to my dismay, as we went 3-7 on predictions. Oh, never tell me again. Just joking. Also going to be recapping week 2 of the NFL season. Now, I am recording this before the Falcons and Eagles game, so roll Eagles or fly Eagles fly, as we'll say, but, you know, it's going to be a fun little episode. No special guests. You know, I've been grinding the special guests, looking to find even more special guests to bring you guys new insights to all sorts of different fields and all sorts of different perspectives of life. I'm excited to do this. I'm excited to get back to the regular routine of things. As always, enjoy. So, of course, kicking things off, I mean, what else would we kick an episode off with but other than new UFC news? And oh my goodness, Dana White cooked. Dana White said, I haven't delivered in a minute, so I'm going to deliver you 3 huge fight announcements. But before those 3 huge fight announcements, we have to show love to some of the lesser fighters, the non-ranked people, the ones you're going to be catching on the cards that, you know, aren't the biggest, but some people will be watching. So first off, a little featherweight action coming, actually bantamweight. Wow, bantamweight action coming at you for UFC Edmonton in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, November 2nd, as Charles Jourdain drops down to bantamweight to take on Victor Henry. Charles Jourdain, 6-7 in the UFC, 15-8 professionally, holds wins over Duhu Choi, Ricardo Ramos, Cron Gracie, but he's been taking some losses as of late, so a career move down to bantamweight is the move. He takes on Victor Henry, who is 3-1 in the UFC, 24-6 professionally, wins over Ronnie Barcelos, Kyler Phillips, a big one, and Rani Yaha. This should be a very, very entertaining fight. This is a good fight for both of these guys, you know, a good name for Victor Henry if he beats Charles Jourdain, and Charles definitely needs to switch it up. He's had so many different opportunities to get a ranked opponent, and every time he gets a ranked opponent, he fails. And he loses. So Charles, he's great at marketing himself, big on the TikTok, big on the Instagram, but is yet to really break through in the UFC. He is in need of that, okay? He's definitely in need of that. You know, born in 95, that would make him 29 years old. Birthday's in November, so he's 28 years old. Gosh, yeah, now's the time to make a career move. You're about to enter your prime, okay? Fighters are usually in their prime from, I'd say, 28 to 34. Usually after like 33, actually, you start to see a bit of a decline unless you're a goat like John Jones. But I mean, interesting stuff. That should be fun. Another matchup coming at you. This one on the prelims of UFC 308 going down in Abu Dhabi, October 26th. One of the biggest cards of the year. I think this might be the second or third biggest card of the entire year. Justin Taffa stepping in to replace Marco Sergio de Lima as he takes on Kennedy Inchukwo. Kennedy Inchukwo, 12-5 professionally, 6-5 in the UFC, wins over Carlos Ulberg, Ian Kulabi, Devin Clark, but he's been getting finished as of late, and, you know, we just don't like that. He takes on Justin Taffa. Justin coming off a brutal loss to Carl Williams. I mean, holy cow, he's got out grappled every round. He's 7-4 professionally, 4-4 in the UFC, all 7 of his wins knockouts, and I mean, the Austin Lane knockout, Parker Porter knockout, Juan Adams knockout, all amazing. This should be a striking matchup. I do favor Justin Taffa in this one, as and Chukani's chin has just looked abysmal in his last few fights. But Justin Taffa, fun fighter. He's from, not really from the Abu Dhabi region. He's from Australia, but close enough. Close enough, if you ask me. Here's another one for you. This one on the prelims of UFC 309, of course, going down in Madison Square Garden, November 16th. Welterweight matchup as Mickey Gall takes on Ramiz Brahmahaj. Mickey Gall, 6-6 in the UFC with a 7-6 professional record. Ramiz Brahmahaj, 10-5 professionally, 2-3 in the UFC. These two are pretty similar. Ramiz is a full-out grappler. I'm talking, that's all he does is grapple. Mickey Gall, you know, I'm talking about a guy whose debut was beating CM Punk. That's been the highlight of his entire career. He also beat Sage Northcutt, which was pretty funny. Ramiz, his biggest win's probably Michael Gilmore, who fought on The Ultimate Fighter, like, a couple of years ago. But this is just a fascinating fight. Both these names, if you're a concurrent UFC fan like me, you see these names, you're almost like, they're still fighting in the UFC? Interesting. Ranked matchup coming at you is Carolina Kowalski, the number 15th ranked woman strawweight, will take on Denise Gomez. Carolina, 16-8 professionally, Denise Gomez, 9-3. Denise, you know, got a big win over Bruna Brazil, knocked out Yasmin Jeraguay. She's got hands for days. And as for Carolina, you know, this is a girl who's beaten Rose Namajunas before. She's kind of been a good good gatekeeper at times. This will be a good test for Denise. But this entire year, 2024 has been a really weird year when we talk about UFC Noche, where people that are supposed to be the top, you know, people are supposed to remain in the rankings, keep losing. So we'll have to see what goes on here. But I might actually favor Denise Gomez in this one. And now, guys, let's get into the big three coming at you all down at UFC 309 in Madison Square Garden. It is looking to be the one of the biggest matchups of the entire year in the main event. We'll talk about that in 1 second. But on the main card, he's finally getting a ranked opponent as Bo Nickel, the 6-0 undefeated, 3-0, all of his fights finishes, finally gets a ranked opponent. Everyone's been calling for it. As he takes on Paul Craig, wait a second, they booted Paul Craig from the rankings. I'm sorry, Paul Craig is no longer ranked, but he is, you know, notoriously been in the higher level of fighting. Wins over Magomed Ankalaev, Shogun Hua, Jamal Hill, all of those men won a belt or fought for a belt. Just wanted to add that. Bo Nickel, I mean, coming off a big win over Cody Brundage. I'm excited to see him compete here. And the biggest test is going to be if he ends up in Paul Craig's guard, what's going to happen? And, you know, I watched Brendan Allen dismantle Paul Craig. I've watched... Who has Paul Craig even fought recently? I'm trying to remember. Was his last fight Brendan Allen? I thought they might have given him a different opponent before them. But I mean, just Bo Nickel has been so incredible. So incredible. Paul Craig, here we go, guys. Let's look at his record. He last fought Kyle Barallo. That's right, he was knocked out. That was back in May. So he's back to take on Bo Nickel, and his career path has not been looking too sweet. But Bo, I'm so happy to be seeing him get an opponent that's just about on the verge of the rankings. And this is a huge test for him. And I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, this should be a walk in the park. Every time people say it's a walk in the park, Paul Craig beats them. Look at Nikita Krylov. Look at Magomed Ankalaev. Look at Jamal Hill. He was able to submit all three of those men with an arm triangle. Just wanted to add that in. The second biggest fight on UFC 309 is a co-main event. It is 5 rounds as the number 2 ranked lightweight Charles de Bronx Oliveira takes on the number 6 UFC lightweight Iron Michael Chandler. That's right, the rematch 3 years in the making. Michael Chandler finally accepting Conor McGregor's not going to fight in the UFC. Actually, if Conor McGregor does return, who's he going to fight? Nate Diaz? I mean, goodness sakes. But Charles Oliveira, you know, his only losses since 2022, actually only losses since 2019, are to Islam Makhachev and Armin Tsarukyan, who are both fighting for the belt, the lightweight belt, later on in this year, probably at the start of 2025. Michael Chandler, I mean, he's 2-3 in the UFC, and all 5 of those fights you could all watch and enjoy yourself. Wins over Tony Ferguson, and who was his other one? Dan Hooker. You also have his fights against Dustin Poirier, Charles Oliveira the first time around, Justin Gaethje. He's been nonstop action. He has been out of action, though, since November of 2022, so no action for the last 2 years. And Charles Oliveira, you know, tough split decision loss to Armin Tsarukyan, that hurt. But, I mean, other than that, he's finished just about everyone in his way. He's finished Michael Chandler before. He's finished Justin Gaethje. He's finished Dustin Poirier. Charles Oliveira is one of my favorite fighters of all time, future Hall of Famer. Excited for this matchup. And then we get to the biggest fight Dana White announced this past Saturday. It's finally happening. Maybe. I don't even know if it's going to happen. I do have a theory about what might happen. But the heavyweight championship is on the line as the number one pound-for-pound fighter, according to Dana White, in the world, the GOAT, unofficially. John Jones is back to defend his heavyweight championship after winning it in March of 2023, over a year and a half later, finally defending. And he takes on the number 8th ranked Stipe Miocic. Why is Stipe even in the rankings? He doesn't even deserve a ranking, but you know, Stipe, 20-4 record, 14-4 in the UFC. Those losses are to Daniel Cormier, I'm pretty sure, Stefan Struve. He's only lost to some of the greats as of late. Stefan Struve, not one of them, but you gotta get what I'm saying. John Jones, last fought Ciryl Gane. I mean, he's beaten Gustafson, Daniel Cormier, Vitor Belfort. This should be a very, very good fight. Hopefully, I don't know what we're gonna get, though. John Jones, 21-1 professionally in the UFC, 27-1 in his MMA career, and that one loss may be overturned. They might be able to get that overturned, but maybe they won't. I am very curious to see what we get here. I haven't seen Stipe Miocic fight since March of 2021. Okay, it has been over 3.5 years. That's ridiculous. He hasn't won in close to, I think, four years and 4 months since his last win. I mean, just the inactivity for both is going to hurt, but I have a theory, guys. I have a theory Stipe Miocic pulls out with an injury And who is the current interim champion? Who will John Jones have to fight? None other than Tom Aspinall. I think it's going to happen. Okay, I think it's going to happen. Tom Aspinall is going to get the call. Ring, ring, ring. Hey, Tom, can you step in to save the freaking day? And he's going to get it done. Okay, I'm a huge, huge Tom Aspinall fan. And I wouldn't necessarily consider myself a John Jones or Stipe Miocic hater. I just think, you know, their era is kind of coming to an end. We're just holding on to it slowly, and we just need to let it go. Plus, let's be real, when have you ever had an interim champ who had to defend his belt and then didn't even get to fight for the next championship opportunity? It just doesn't make any sense. I don't know if Stipe's going to get finished in round one or round two. I don't know if John's going to knock him out, take him down, submit him. But I think John Jones manhandles Stipe if they actually do end up fighting. UFC 309 is looking to be absolutely loaded. I think the biggest question now is, what's UFC 310? You know, if you want to check that out, go watch episode 121 where me and Zeke Clark talk about what the main event of UFC 310 could potentially be. But that's all your new UFC news for now. A lot of fun stuff, a lot of fun fights. End out the year 2024 has been a very interesting year in MMA. I can't wait to talk more about that when we review UFC Note. But right now, a favorite segment I added, still one of my favorites, where we look at top 10 new things in pop culture. I mean, always a good time, always fun. Let's give her a little go. So, first off, actually, gosh, they always give me so many things to look at. I don't even know. Here's an interesting one for you. Disney leadership reportedly put a large part of the failure of Lightyear, the movie, down to the same-sex kiss which occurred in the film. Continuous notes were then given to animators to make Riley come across as less gay in Inside Out 2. I find this very funny because Disney's been trying to push a woke agenda. It's very, very evident, okay? And one of the main issues is that people don't want to see them. They don't want to feel forced. And I'll give you a great example is Modern Family has a gay couple, Mitchell and Cam. You know, they kiss in the show. They hug. They do all of that. And no one cares. They're funny. It's because they don't show, just they just don't push it up into your faces. And there's plenty of shows. Schmidt's Creek, I can think of it. Pretty much any show nowadays you can think of. There's a gay character in it. I mean, look at Neil Patrick Harris. He was a gay actor, and no one minded him as Barney. He wasn't actually gay in the show, but I hope everyone gets the point I'm trying to make. And Disney just, they continuously push it. I've never seen Lightyear. You know, that era of films is kind of past for me. Maybe if I have kids one day, or when I have kids one day, hopefully, I'll watch those movies with them. But as for now, keep that out of my feed. I could care less. You know, it's also not my demographic. So do I have a right to say? Do I have a right to give an opinion when it's not my demographic? I don't really know. Number two, James Cameron is set to direct The Last Train from Hiroshima as soon as Avatar production allows him to. The film follows the man who survived the atomic blast of Hiroshima, got on a train to Nagasaki, and then survived a nuclear explosion in that city. That's crazy. Okay, that's crazy, and I actually think that could be a real story. James Cameron, one of the greatest directors of all time, he's been just dedicating his entire life the last two decades to Avatar, but I'm interested to see. Actually, I would so see this film at a theater. I love that. I love the whole premise of, what's it called? World War II. The premise of World War II. I like learning about World War II. I should better phrase that there. Super, super interesting stuff coming out of that realm. They aren't giving me too much, if I'm being honest. Number three, an exclusive shadow poster for Sonic the Hedgehog. 3 will be giving to the first 300 people with Transformer 1 tickets on September 20th. Interesting. Will I be seeing either of those films? I will not be. I really do not plan on seeing any of those. It's just personal preference. It does not look interesting to me. I don't know. That's just me. The most Emmy wins by network at number 4. FX won 36 Emmys. Netflix won 24. HBO/Max won 14. And Apple TV Plus won 10. Interesting. I've not watched any of those award shows. I never watched the Oscars, never watched the Emmys. But I believe a big reason for all that was due to Shogun and The Bear, which have been huge hits. Still, yeah, I see both those shows. I've heard Shogun and The Bear are both amazing shows. I just haven't really been watching too much TV. Whenever I do watch something, it's usually just YouTube, just to kill a couple minutes. So interesting stuff right there. Is it interesting though? I always use that little adverb as a segment, but is any of this actually interesting? No. Number 5, Baby Reindeer wins Best Limited Series at the Emmys. Baby Reindeer, one of the weirdest shows. One of the weirdest shows. And actually, Richard Gadd won Best Actor in a Limited Series. he was amazing in that. Okay, he was absolutely amazing in that, playing himself, which just shows the reality of it. You know, knowing that he's playing himself, we see him. We see him as the character in the film, because it actually is. And it's just disturbing, everything that happened to him. I mean, I don't even know what to make of that. Watch Baby Reindeer, you'll see for yourself. Number six, Glenn Powell has a new look as Chad Powers. The series follows a college quarterback whose career ends after bad behavior, so he walks onto a struggling Southern football team disguised as the talented Chad Powers. Coming soon to Hulu. And this is all based on, I think it was Eli Manning or Jared Goff, who did a skit where they went on to a practice for like a practice tryouts, like walk-on tryouts for a team as Chad Powers, and that was their name. I believe that's the background to it. I mean, Glenn Powell's on absolute fire right now, taking over the game. Good for him. He puts in the work, he puts in the dedication. Good stuff there. Number seven. Gosh, these are all Emmy stuff. Number seven, Speak No Evil opens with 11.5 domestically. Budget for the film was $15 million. The very interesting thing with James McAvoy as a serial killer, as a psychopath, he plays so many weird roles. James McAvoy must just have the craziest mind of any actor I know. Number seven, Denzel Washington responds to criticisms about his accent in Gladiator 2. Well, the thing was, where are we? Whose accent would it be? You're going to end up irritating someone and end up with a bad African accent. Yeah, everyone's hating on his accent for the trailers that they've seen, but at the same time, no one's really, you know, everyone's mad at the accent, and, you know, they just have to accept that there's never been a black emperor, okay? Not to sound woke or anything. But, I mean, I could care less. It's freaking Denzel Washington as the emperor. I love that. But no one seems to be in uproar of that, but they're uproar about him doing an African accent? Like, that's just kind of weird. I don't think they should be in an uproar about any of that. I think you should just enjoy the film and understand that Hollywood is Hollywood, and if an actor seems fit for the role, then they'll be good in it. Number eight, Tom Holland and Austin Butler will reportedly star as a drug-smuggling team of brothers in a new movie, American Speed. Well, good. Get Tom Holland out of the Spider-Man universe. Goodness me. Look at Austin Butler. He's been finally able to separate himself from Elvis with all of his movie roles as of late. Tom Holland is still currently Spider-Man. You really got to break that, or else you're just going to get sucked on into it. Number nine, Donny Cates says he has been talking with Sony and got to read a script for Venom: The Last Dance. I'll say this, it is so much bigger and so much more ambitious than you can imagine, and null, holy S-word, that's how you treat a king. So yes, the final Venom movie coming out in October. I am, honestly, the marketing's been pretty good for it. The movie looks somewhat interesting. I don't really know too much about the Venom, the Sony universe, but they've honestly sold me. They've honestly sold me with all they've been marketing-wise, and I like Tom Hardy as an actor. I think he's an amazing actor. When it's Tom Hardy in a role, he plays the character so well, I see the character, not the actor. That's how you know they're good at their job. And finally, actually, we're going to do two just because I want to point out something funny. But Donald Glover says he just wants his Lando movie to be fun. As a Star Wars fan myself, I think it's important that there needs to be more fun being had. It's very hard to have fun right now in the Star Wars universe. That's a great point. Donald Glover, one of my favorite actors, I would say. I have so many favorite actors. I either hate you or I love you, if I'm being honest. And like, they did a Solo film with Han Solo prequel. They're doing a Lando prequel. And, you know, they're kind of beating around the bush. I kind of want to see a new movie where Rey gets killed by, like, someone wielding a purple lightsaber. That's always been my dream for the Star Wars universe. But I would see a Lando film at home on Disney Plus. I wouldn't necessarily watch it in a theater, per se. But then again, these Star Wars fans, they get a little crazy. And finally, just to throw this in here, Borderlands ends its theatrical run with $31 million made. The budget for the film was $115 million. That is absolutely insane, losing that much money. But those are your top 10 new things in pop culture, in the movie world, TV show world. Oh, man, it's a crazy universe out there with so many things being made left, right, and center. But finally, you know, this is sort of my intro here. We have a little minute intro to kick off every podcast. But I always build up to one of my favorite segments during the NFL season, and it encompasses us until probably February, and that is reviewing week two of the NFL. And a lot of action went down, a lot of stuff happened, and we're going to talk about it here. All right, we got some undefeated teams, we got some winless teams. Some may surprise you, some may not. Let's get right on into it. So, since there is not a UFC event this upcoming Saturday, on the second episode of this week, episode 123, we're probably going to be doing some more fantasy football talk. I mean, we're going to do a little bit here, but I won't personally talk about my teams. All I can say is that I need Saquon Barkley, Jalen Hurts, and Devontae Smith to have the games of their life, and Bijan Robinson to not have the best game of his life. So let's kick things off with our Thursday Night Football matchup, which actually happened on the last day that I recorded a podcast, funny enough. And it was the Bills taking on the Dolphins, of course, a little AFC East matchup. And the Bills won that one 31-10. Bills now move to 2-0 atop the AFC East. Dolphins at 1-1 are actually at the bottom of the AFCs, interestingly enough. Top fantasy performers for the Bills, you got James Cook. I thought it was Jared Cook for some reason. James Cook, 28.5 fantasy points. Buffalo D, 16. K. Khalil Shakir, I believe it is, 10.6. As for Dolphins, Devon Achane, 29.5. Oh, yeah. Jonnu Smith, 11.3. Jalen Waddle, 8.5. Tail of the game, I mean, first quarter, start off 7-7. Second quarter, 17 unanswered points for the Bills. They also punched in a pick six in the third quarter to seal it off. Josh Allen, pretty chill day, not even 10 fantasy points, but at 139 yards on 13 for 19, throwing for one touchdown, also rushed twice for 2 yards. But James Cook, 11 rushes, 78 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was on fire. I mean, other than that, nothing really happened. Keon Coleman not getting a catch for any of you fancy owners out there. Very tough. Tua Tagovailoa, 145 yards, 1 touchdown, 3 picks, and got a concussion and is going to be out for the foreseeable future. In will step Skylar Thompson, who, by the way, ended the game off 8 for 14, 80 yards with what little time he had. He was able to contribute. Chane, 96 yards rushing, 7 catches, 69 yards and touchdown. This is one of the biggest steals of last year's draft. Achane is such a beast. Jonnu Smith, 6 catches, 53 yards. Tyreek Hill, only 3 catches, 24 yards. Embarrassing stuff there. Look, okay, I picked the Dolphins in this one. I thought they were on fire. I should have known better. I should have known that the Bills have just been feeling it as of late, and they were able to get this one done. So good job to the Bills. We'll see how they do next week. We'll drop our predictions on the next episode. But as for now, good luck to both these teams next week. Good job, Bills. Then we moved into our Sunday slate of things, and I was recovering from a good old fun weekend as I watched all of these games. We kicked it off, little Raiders visiting the Ravens, and oh my goodness, the Ravens are in turmoil, losing 26-23, choking a 10-point lead in the, my goodness, what am I trying to say here? The fourth quarter. Sometimes I just lose my train of thought here. That's right. What was it? 13 unanswered points to end the game. Utterly abysmal. Only touchdowns going to Zay Flowers and Derrick Henry for the Baltimore Ravens. Top fantasy performers, Devontae Adams, 26 points. Brock Bowers, 18.8 on my bench. We are benching Zamir White, let me tell you that. Daniel Carlson, 18 fantasy points. Zay Flowers, 22. Derrick Henry, 16.6. And Lamar Jackson, 16.38. Raiders, man, let me tell you, this team is filled with dogs. Okay, it's filled with dogs. They may be third in the AFC East. I mean, the AFC West, that's because you got two teams there that are 2-0. But, I mean, 1-1, only a -9 point differential. And it's only week two. Gardner Minshew, 30 for 38, a touchdown and a pick. Very impressive stuff from him. Devontae Adams, 9 catches, 110 yards and a touchdown. Brock Bowers, 9 catches, 98 yards. Zamir White, the starting running back, 9 rushes, 24 yards. Masson had one rushing yard for 1 touchdown. Just, I don't even know how they freaking did it. As for the Ravens, Lamar Jackson, 247 yards, touchdown and a pick. Also rushed 5 times for 45 yards. Derrick Henry, 84 rushing yards for 1 touchdown. Zay Flowers, 7 catches, 91 yards and a touchdown. Mark Andrews, 4 catches, 51 yards. Outshone Isaiah Likely this week. All I'm going to say is what I think a lot of people have noticed is that the offense for the Ravens is very predictable. Okay, it's very predictable. When Derrick Henry's in, they're rushing with him. When he's not in, they're not. They're throwing it. And they were able to, teams are picking up on that very easily. And the Raiders just picked up momentum late, got it done. Gardner and Devontae actually had a connection. I know Devontae Adams was loving this game with how well his team performed. Good stuff for them. And I mean, damn, the Ravens 0-2 to start the year. A Super Bowl favorited team is now one of the select few who are 0-2. Not just 0-2, they're below the Bengals, okay? They're below the Bengals and a -10 point differential. Ravens are definitely going to need to turn things around as they take on the Cowboys next week. We'll see how they do. Moving along, we headed to Jacksonville as the Browns visited the Jaguars. I think that's how I'm doing. Oh, wait, they just show. No, road team started off, wow, 3-0 to kick off NFL Week 2. Browns win 18-13. Pretty boring game. They move on. They move to 1-1 to start out the year. Jaguars start off 0-2. Yikes. AFC South looking not too hot. Deshaun Watson, top fantasy performer for the Browns, 15.44. Dustin Hopkins, 13. Jerry Jeudy, 12.3. Travis Etienne, 14.8 for the Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence, 13.3. And Brian Thomas Jr., my favorite rookie, 11.4. Scoring for this game, Deshaun Watson punching a touchdown from the 1 yard line in the first quarter. You then had nothing much. You actually had a safety. Trevor Lawrence got sacked in the end zone to end the game. Other than that, shout out to Cam Little, who was catching, I mean, he kicked, what, three field goals this game? Did what he needed to do. Deshaun, 186 yards, no turnovers. That's good. Deontay Foreman led the day rushing, 14 rushes, 42 yards. Deshaun Watson, of course, ran in a little touchdown. Elijah Moore, 6 catches, 44 yards. Jerry Jeudy, 5 catches, 73 yards. Mari Cooper, only 3 catches, 11 yards. And oddly enough, this is, oh wait, never mind. I thought Trevor Lawrence also had 186 yards. Trevor Lawrence, 14 for 30, 220 yards, ETN, 52 yards. Actually, he ran a touchdown, forgot to mention that. And other than that, nothing much from this Jaguars team at all, none whatsoever. And they just don't look too hot. Kind of tough start of the season. You know, they play the Dolphins, played the Browns here. Browns have a really good defense. I'll add that. Browns defense had, I think, 9 points. It's tough. It is very tough. And all I can really say is kudos to the Browns. You get it done, 1-1, second in the AFC North. Good stuff there. But little benefits for this game. Not a real barn burner, okay? Not a real barn burner in this matchup. Keeping us moving, here's a fun one. Jets taking on the Titans. And for a second straight week, the Titans blow a lead. Unfreaking real. Starting off the game 10-7. It would actually be tied 17-17 heading into the fourth quarter, and Braylon Allen would punch in the game-winning touchdown with 4 minutes and 31 seconds left. Breece Hall, 24.4 fantasy points. Braylon Allen, 19.6. Aaron Rodgers at 15.44. Calvin Ridley, great game, 24.7. Tony Pollard, 15.2. And Giaduddy's ex, Will Levis. Do we even call Giaduddy Will Levis' ex with a game like this? Will Levis is the ex. And I mean, holy freaking cow, he was getting bitched at by his head coach for fumbling. Like, it was crazy. He was screaming at Will Levis. And I mean, honestly, you know, Titans are 0-2, but they are technically atop, oddly, the AFC South when it comes to 0-2 teams. You know, so, yet to win a game this year. Let's talk about the stats. Aaron Rodgers, 176 yards, threw 2 touchdowns. Did what he needed to do. Breece Hall, 14 rushes, 62 yards. But it was Braylon Allen, surprising everyone, caught a touchdown, ran in a touchdown. He was a dog this game. Breece Hall ran a touchdown as well. No, he actually caught a touchdown. Breece Hall, 7 catches, 50 yards. Breece Hall is such a talent. Amazing work there. As for the Titans, Will Levis, 192 yards, touchdown, picking a fumble. Tony Pollard rushed 62 yards on 17 carries. Calvin Ridley ran in like a little screen pass, a little end around. And he also had 4 catches for 77 yards. So there's that. DeAndre Hopkins, only 1 catch, 9 yards. Remember when DeAndre Hopkins was a killer? Now he's just nothing. Now he's just nothing. I have nothing really to say here. Jets doing what they are supposed to do. I mean, and so much is expected of them this year. AFC East, I believe, is the best. The only division in the AFC to actually have every team with a win. Jets are currently in third, but like I said, it's a long season. Only loss now is the 49ers, but as we're going to see in a second, 49ers did not have a good week as the 49ers lose to my Minnesota Vikings. That's right. They are such dogs. We got dogs out there. Let me tell you that. The Minnesota Vikings are freaking dogs, and there are only, I repeat, there are only 4 teams in the NFC undefeated, and you best bet one of them is the Minnesota Vikings. 2-0 atop the NFC North. And by the way, the point differential, are you freaking kidding me? Plus 28 to start the year. Incredible. George Kittle, you got to give George some credit. 20.6 fantasy points. Debo, 18. And Jordan Mason, this kid, 17.4. He is such an animal. Could be one of the rookies of the year if he's a rookie. I don't really know. As for the Vikings, Justin Jefferson, leaving the third quarter with a quad injury, still dropped 23.3 fantasy points, including a 97-yard touchdown catch from the three-yard line. Are you freaking kidding me? Sam Darnold, 19.92, and Jalen Naylor, 14.4. Hey, our defense looking incredible. Let me just tell you that. Vikings starting out the first half, insane. Okay, how about that? 13-7 heading into the half, and then we kicked it off a little third quarter touchdown. 20-7 soon turned into 20-14, 23-14. Jake Moody kicked a field goal with a minute and 12 seconds left, and we easily got the onside kick. The new rule is so dumb for onside kicks, where you have to tell the other team. That ruins all the fun. Vikings get done. That's all I'm happy about, and the team looked amazing doing it. Brock Purdy, 319 yards, touchdown on pick. Pretty routine for the kid. Mason, 20 rushes, 100 yards, one touchdown. Amazing. That's all I'm going to say. Amazing. Debo, 8 catches, 110 yards. George Kittle, 7 catches, 76 yards. Caught the only touchdown for him, passing-wise. Impressive. Look, this team's good. The defense just couldn't stop the Minnesota Vikings today. Sam Darnold, 268 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 rough pick. One rough pick, I will say that. Sam Darnold has looked impressive. Both of his picks this year, pretty abysmal. Ty Chandler led the day, 10 rushes, 82 yards. Also had Aaron Jones, 9 rushes, 32 yards. Aaron Jones, 5 catches, 36 yards. JJ, 4 catches, 133 yards, a touchdown. Jalen Naylor, 3 catches, 54 yards, and a touchdown. The wide receiving core is not too hot. You know, it's not too hot. Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson may be injured. Also, TJ Hawkinson is injured, but you know, we have that indomitable human spirit over here in Minnesota. We're bringing that into Houston next week. Actually, I think Houston's coming to us, so we're going to be getting a win there. As for the 49ers, you really got to assess what went wrong here. You really got to assess what went wrong. They're now third in the NFC West. And after such a dominant first week one to suffer in week two, I mean, this is incredible. Vikings didn't win our first four games last year. We're already doing way better than that. I love this team. They're amazing. Vikings fan till I die. I pick them every single week. And do I understand they won't go 17-0? Yes. But if you're not going to pick your team to win every week, why are you a fan? I'm going to just tell you that for a fact. Next up, okay, I take back my statement. If you're a Panthers fan and you're picking against the Panthers every week, I completely support you. Chargers blow out the Panthers 26-3. The Carolina Panthers have played two games this season and have a combined 13 points. They are officially the worst team in the league, minus 60-point differential. It's only week two. You've only played two games. It's just atrocious in Carolina. By the way, news dropping today. As of Monday, September 16th, Bryce Young benched for Andy Dalton heading into week three. That's right. The number one pick last year, who has started every single game besides the game he's been injured, it just got benched in week three of his second season in the NFL. He's entering Zach Wilson territory, and even worse than Zach Wilson. Bryce Young, what is going on here? But as for Chargers, 2-0 to start out the year. Better than the Chiefs in the AFC West point differential-wise. That's right, 48 points for, 13 points against through the first 2 weeks. This Chargers team, fun and feisty. Harbaugh bringing in a little bit of change. Quentin Johnson, 22.1 fantasy points. J.K. Dobbins, 20.1. Herbert had 11. Chuba Hubbard, 11.6. The only Panther to get into double digits. Next biggest fantasy performer for the Panthers, Miles Sanders, 5.5. Unreal. Quentin Johnson, 2 first half touchdowns. J.K. Dobbins had a first half touchdown. Third and fourth quarter were boring. Thank you for Eddie Pinero, who hit the one field goal opportunity he was given. Insane. Justin Herbert, 130 yards, 2 touchdowns and pick. Didn't perform the best, but that'll also happen. When you run the ball, I kid you not, let me do some quick math here for you guys. 44 rushing attempts this game. That is right. Harbaugh bringing that energy here. It's worked. Gus Edwards, 18 rushes, 59 yards. J.K., 17, 131, and a touchdown. J.K. Dobbins is, I'm going to give him comeback player of the year at this point. Unreal. Quentin Johnson, 5 catches, 51 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Ladd McConkey, only 2 catches, 26 yards, but they ran through this Carolina team. Bryce Young, 18 for 26, 84 yards, 1 touchdown. Chuba Hubbard, 10 rushes, 64 yards. I was thinking of points-wise. Adam Thielen only had 2 catches. Deontay Johnson, 3 catches. Tommy Tremble, 3 catches. Yeah, this Panthers team sucks. This Chargers team is awesome. Nothing much more to say here. I feel bad if you're a Panthers fan. If you're a Chargers fan, good for you. We're kind of in the same boat, Chargers and Vikings. Nothing. No one really expects a lot of us, and we're out here proving all the haters wrong. I hope we play this season. That'd be fun. Do we still have more noon games? Gosh, there was a lot of noon games the first few weeks. I always forget about that. Seahawks visited the Patriots, and we got our first overtime game, I believe. I can't really recall, but this was an overtime game here as the Seahawks were visiting the New England Patriots, and the Seahawks got this one done, 23-20. DK Metcalf, 28.9 fantasy points. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 23.7. That's right. Zach Charbonnet, 17.9. I did not know that, Kenneth Walker was out. He was starting in my $500 league, and I'm going to lose that week because of that. Son of a gun. Hunter Henry, 18.9. That's right. Hunter Henry having his one good game of the entire season, so everyone picks him up off of waivers. Ramondre Stevenson, 17 points, doing the best he could for the Patriots. And this was pretty competitive the entire day. First quarter, he had a 56-yard touchdown pass from DK Metcalf, from Geno Smith to DK Metcalf. Charbonnet punched in some stuff. Third quarter, nothing. Fourth quarter, Ramondre Stevenson had a little 1-yard touchdown punch in. And Jason Myers carried the day. Jason Myers hitting 3 field goals, including a 31-yarder to win the game. Geno Smith might just be the best quarterback in fantasy football right now, in the league right now. 327 yards, 1 touchdown, balling out. Charbonnet, 38 yards, 1 touchdown. But it was a duo show receiver-wise. DK Metcalf, 10 catches, 120 yards, touchdown. Jackson Smith and Jigba, 12 catches, 117 yards. I knew the kid would have a breakout. I knew week one was a flux. Okay, Jackson Smith and Jigba will soon become the number one wide receiver option for the Seahawks. You mark my words. As for Patriots, you know, Jacoby, only 149 yards and touchdown. Gibson, 11 rushes for 96 yards. Ramondre Stevenson, 21 rushes for 81 yards, got a touchdown. Hunter Henry, 8 catches, 109 yards. They just need more people working together. They almost pulled it off. They really almost did. Patriots, I'm not losing hope with you. I'm not losing hope with this Patriots team. Second in the AFC East, they still have a +3 point differential, despite being 1-1. I like their odds this year, all right? This coaching change is working out. I'm excited to see it. As for the Seahawks, I mean, 2-0, one of the 4 2-0 teams in the NFC, +9 point differential, doing pretty good. And you know, the FC West, it's a tough division. We're going to mention the Cardinals in a bit. They're an absolute heater of a team this year. Seahawks, good for you. Moving into our next game, Saints and Cowboys, the biggest shocker of, I would say, week number 2 was the Saints destroying the Cowboys, not even just obliterating them, utterly dismantling this Cowboys team. And as a Cowboys defense owner, I was not happy. Okay, I was not happy in the slightest as the Saints win 44-19, including, this is insane, they scored on 7 straight possessions. I don't know if that, actually, I heard that they scored on 15, or that maybe they've scored on the last 15 straight possessions or something like that, looking at this game and last game. I don't know. I saw some stat like that somewhere, but this team was just utterly insane. And let me just start it off. Alvin Kamara starts off a little touchdown run. Everyone's like, okay, Alvin Kamara's back. Brandon Aubrey, 52-yard field goal, doing his stuff. Rashid Shaheed, 70-yard touchdown pass. Dude is an absolute killer. Brandon Aubrey, field goal. Then Alvin Kamara, 57-yard touchdown pass running. Incredible. CeeDee Lamb answered with a 65-yard touchdown pass. Then Alvin Kamara, another touchdown. Okay, Derek Carr punched in a little touchdown. Brandon Aubrey, 48-yard field goal. Third quarter, Brandon Aubrey, 4-yard field goal. Third quarter, 7-yard touchdown run from Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara completing the day with 3 touchdowns. Actually, 4 touchdowns. My bad. Blake Grubb, 26-yard field goal. So that's right. Alvin Kamara, 44 fantasy points, 45 in some leagues. He was insane. Derek Carr, 21.82. Rashid Shaheed, 20.9. CeeDee Lamb, 19. Brandon Aubrey, 17. Yeah, the Saints were just on one today. Derek Carr, 243 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick. He did a good job, but it was Kamara. 20 rushes, 115 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 catches, 65 yards, a touchdown. Rashid Shaheed, 4 catches, 96 yards, a touchdown. Actually, Chris Olave, 4 catches, 81 yards. This team's frightening. This team is really frightening, if I'm being honest. As for passing-wise, you know, Dak Prescott, 293 yards, a touchdown, 2 picks. They just had his number. They really just had his number. CeeDee Lamb, pretty run-of-the-mill game, 4 catches, 90 yards, and a touchdown. Did what he needed to. Running wise, they had 6 different people run the ball. Most yardage, Rico Dowdle, 7 rushes, 30 yards. Cowboys, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you, dude. They're third in the NFC East now. We'll see how the Eagles perform tonight. But just insane, insane performance from the Saints. They're one of the few 2-0 teams, as I mentioned. 91 points for, 29 points against. Actually, the Saints might be the best team in the league currently, stats-wise. Good job to them. Derek Carr just grinding, working his butt off. Alvin Kamara still proving he's legit. Depending on how Saquon Barkley does tonight, I think Alvin Kamara is going to remain the number one fantasy running back after week number two. Keeping us a moving, we just had so many freaking games. Holy cow. Giants took on the Commanders. Commanders win 21-18 on a game-winning field goal. Let's just say Brian Daboll was not happy in this one. Malik Nabers, 28.7 fantasy points. The rookie showing out. Daniel Jones, 18.32. As for Washington, the kicker, Siebert, 22 fantasy points. Brian Robinson Jr., 14. I mean, let me just say, Austin Siebert scored 7 field goals, 21 points scored by one kicker. Incredible. As for the Giants, 18 points. I mean, Malik Nabers caught a touchdown pass. Wendell Robinson caught a touchdown pass. Devin Singletary ran in a touchdown. But, I mean, it was just gang. It was just gang for Austin Siebert. Offensive-wise for the Giants, 178 yards, 2 touchdowns for Daniel Jones. Much better than his performance against the Vikings. Devin Singletary, 95 yards and a touchdown. We like to see that. Malik Nabers, 10 catches, 127 yards, 1 touchdown. Of the 16 completions Daniel Jones had, 10 went to Malik Nabers. He clearly has a new favorite in the rookie. As for Washington, Jaden Daniels, 226 yards passing, 44 yards rushing. Brian Robinson Jr., 133 yards rushing. That's impressive. They just could not finish. They could not get in the end zone. Giants kept stopping them. But the Giants defense kept putting the Commanders in good field position. They kept allowing them to punch it in. So Commanders 1-1, second best team in the NFC East. Of course, Eagles could change that. As for the Giants, minus 25 point differential, 0-2 to start off the year. They're better than they were last year. I can already tell they'll be better than the Panthers, but still, there's just something missing. There just really is something missing. All right, we got 2 more noon o'clock games to give it to you. Buccaneers shock the Lions at home 20-16, which, you know, honestly, I picked the Lions to win. I should have picked the Bucs, but it is always nice to see an NFC North divisional rival losing a game. Everyone this week, was thinking the Lions were getting it down, but no, the Buccaneers are just, they got some dogs out there. They got some dogs barking out in Tampa Bay. And by the way, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Baker Bucs, 2-0 to start off the year, plus 21 point differential. Good stuff for them. As for Lions, second best team in the NFC North, 1-1, plus 2 point differential. Yeah, you know, they're still relevant. Chris Godwin, 24.7 fantasy points. Baker Mayfield, 18.8. Amon-Ra St. Brown having a nice little bounce back game of 22.9. Jahmyr Gibbs, 17.6. David Montgomery, 17. Sam Laporta, 3.3. Sam, what's going on, man? We really got to get Zachary some points here. What are you doing, Sam Laporta? Scoring-wise, pretty competitive first half. Was going into the half at 13-6. It would then turn into 16-20 at the end of the third quarter, and no one scored in the fourth. How about that? I didn't even realize that. I guess I was just watching this game on Red Zone. Baker Mayfield, 185 yards, touchdown and a pick. Also ran 34 yards for a touchdown. He was a dog. Chris Godwin, 7 catches, 117 yards, and a touchdown. He was doing great. Only 4 players caught a pass of the 12 Baker completed. That's really interesting. They were running it today. Rashad White, 10 rushes, only 18 yards. Losing me my fantasy matchups here, Rashad. Come on, lock it in. Lions, Jared Goff, 307 yards, but threw 2 picks. That'll hurt. Also, shout to the punter, Fox. 17-yard first down throw when you're on third in, 14 from your own 20. Dan Campbell's a madman, and I love it. Jahmyr Gibbs, 13 rushes for 84 yards. Montgomery had 11 rushes, 35 yards, punching the only touchdown. Amon-Ra, 11 catches, 119 yards, the stud of the day. Actually, Jameson Williams, 5 catches, 79 yards. He was doing good himself. Look, Buccaneers just... They recently played this team, okay? They played them in the playoffs last year. They beat them. And the Lions were like, this is just not happening this year. It's just not going to happen. And the Buccaneers, they knew what to do. They executed. And this team is good besides Rashad White. All right, Baker Mayfield, MVP run incoming. And then we get into our final noon game. Goodness me. Packers win 16-10 over the Colts. My parents were actually at this game. Told me they had a fantastic time. How about that? Packers 1-1 are bottom of the NFC North for some reason. Interesting. As for the Colts, one of the very few 0-2 teams in the league. Actually, in the AFC in general, there are 6 0-2 teams. In the entire league total, 7, 8, 9, 10. If the Falcons don't win tonight, there will be 10 total teams 0-2. But Colts, I don't know. This Colts team is good, but they just can't execute. Alex Pierce, 16.6, becoming the number one wide receiver in Indianapolis. Jonathan Taylor, 15.5. Anthony Richardson, only 9.86. Josh Jacobs, 13.1 fantasy points. Malik Willis, 12.98. Dontavian Wicks, 11.6. Only one touchdown scored in this game. Dontavian Wicks in the first quarter. Actually, Alex Pierce caught one in the fourth, but they didn't get the extra point, so... Actually, they did get the extra point. My goodness. What am I reading the stats wrong for? Interestingly enough, Brandon Everson, 3 field goals. Good for them. Anthony Richardson, 204 yards, a touchdown, 3 picks. Oh, yikes. Taylor rushed for 103 yards. Pierce, 5 catches, 56 yards, and a touchdown. Yeah. Wow, actually, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different Colts caught a pass from Anthony Richardson. Wow. Of his 17 throws, 10 different human beings caught a pass. Wow. Green Bay, Malik Willis, 122 yards and a touchdown, 12 for 14. Did what he needed to, but oh my goodness, if you thought the Chargers ran the ball a lot, Josh Jacobs, 32 rushes for 151 yards, okay? He ran 32 times. Malik Willis ran 6. That's 38. Lloyd ran 6 times. That's 44. Reed ran twice. That's 46. Wilson ran it 5 times. That's 53 total rushing attempts for the Packers today. Yeah, if you have a running back, put them in against the Colts. Holy cow. Romeo Doubs, 3 catches and 62 yards, had the most yardage. Jalen Reed, two catches, 9 yards, didn't do too much. Packers, of course, my arch enemy. I did not predict them to win. I never picked the Packers to win. It's kind of a thing. I always pick the Vikings, never pick the Packers. Colts, just, I have no idea. But yet again, this Packers team is very talented, very good. They'll be back. I would be a bit concerned if I am any of these teams playing them, but we'll have to see. Good win for the Packers. I'll give you your credit. Another shocking performance, which I wasn't shocked by the winner of this. I was shocked by just the destruction, the connectedness of this team as the Cardinals beat the Rams 41-10 in St. Cooper Cup. Also, not really doing much. Puka Nacua, of course, not in this game. Very interesting. Kyren Williams, 15.2 fantasy points, the only good player for the Rams. As for the Cardinals, that's right, the number 2 pick in the draft, Marvin Harrison Jr., 29 fantasy points. Incredible. Kyler Murray, 28.54. Even James Conner dropping a little 19.4 bomb. And this team started off hot. Marvin Harrison Jr., a 23-yard touchdown pass and a 60-yard touchdown pass, both in the first quarter. Elijah Higgins would catch a touchdown pass in the second quarter. James Conner would run in a touchdown in the third quarter. And Trey McBride would get a fumble recovery into the end zone for a touchdown. How about that? Trey McBride, fantasy owners, good for you. Rams, man, Matthew Stafford, 216 yards. That's it. Kyren Williams, 12 rushes, 25 yards, 1 touchdown. That was it. DeMarcus Robinson, 2 catches, 50 yards, the leading score point yardage-wise. I mean, the Rams just had nothing. The Cardinals were on lock this game. Kyler, 266 yards, 3 touchdowns. James Conner, 21 rushes, 122 yards, and 1 touchdown. Actually, Kyler Murray, we'll give him credit. 5 catches, 59 rushing yards. Trey McBride, 6 catches, 67 yards. He had the most catches, but the yardage-wise, 4 catches, 103 yards, 2 touchdowns. Looking like his daddy. That's right, Marvin Harrison Jr., an absolute stud. Looking like a number 2 pick out there. Looking like the number 2 pick in the draft. This Cardinals team, I had a feeling after watching them perform against the Bills, they were going to be good. So happy I nailed this prediction. They're 1-1 with a plus 25 point differential, 69-4, 44 against NFC West. Look out. 49ers look out too. Actually, the Cardinals could win the NFC West. I'm getting a little ambitious here with my predictions, but we'll have to see. As for the Rams, 0-2 to start off the year, minus 37 point differential. Yikes. Rams are never winning another Super Bowl at this rate. Second to last 3:30 game of NFL Sunday as the Steelers took on the Broncos. And this was my eliminator pick. You know, if I get this wrong, I won't get to predict anymore. And we nailed it. Steelers did what they needed to. Stood on business. stood on business. I'll tell you that. Good job, Seth, my good buddy. Of course, a Steelers fan. Steelers, one of the few 2-0 teams in the league. Holy cow. Only allowed 16 points through 2 weeks now. This defense is stifling. It could also show just how bad the Broncos are. Oh my gosh. 13-6. Pittsburgh D, 12 points. Justin Fields, 11.38. That was that. Josh Reynolds, 13.3 fantasy points. Javonte Williams, 11.5. Yeah, this was a pretty abysmal game. Was not really watching this one, even with it on red zone. Just nothing. I mean, Darnell Washington caught a touchdown pass in the first quarter. That was it. That was it. I mean, the Broncos didn't even score until the 10-minute, 42-second mark of the fourth quarter where they kicked a field goal. They also kicked a field goal with under 2 minutes left. And that was that. This Broncos team is not good. Justin Fields, 117 yards and a touchdown. Working on the arm a lot more. I'll tell you that. Justin Fields doing what he can. It was a shame Russell Wilson couldn't play his former team. Did what he needed to. Najee Harris, 69 yards rushing. Pat Freiermuth, 4 catches, 39 yards. The leader for the day. As for Denver, Bo Nix, 246 yards. Was letting it fly a lot more. 20 completions on 35 attempts. But threw 2 picks. Okay, Bo really needs to get the picks under control. He's also the leading rusher, despite only rushing 4 times. So, yeah, this Broncos team sucks. Bronco team is not it. Let me tell you that. Broncos starting out the year 0-2, minus 13-point differential. Low-scoring games for the Broncos to start off the year. No real fantasy hitters on either of these teams. I'd go Pittsburgh D, if anyone. Final game of NFL Sunday for the 3:30 slate. Almost faked you out there. As the Chiefs took on the Bengals, and this might have been the best game of the entire week. I kid you not. Chiefs win 26-25 on a game-winning field goal. Joe Shiesty, 17.2 fantasy points. Mike Gesicki, 16.1. And Evan McPherson, sadly, 16 fantasy points, cooking me. Rashee Rice, 18.5. Isaiah Pacheco, 16.1, getting hurt. Patrick Mahomes, 12.94. Scoring-wise, first quarter, field goal from each of these men had it 3-3. Then Andre Isova got a little touchdown pass. Rashee Rice got a 44-yard touchdown pass from Mahomes. Then two Evan McPherson field goals had the Bengals up heading into the third quarter. Wanya Morris would catch a little touchdown pass from Mahomes on a little lineman fake. Isova would catch another touchdown pass from Joe Burrow to give them the lead. But then Shamari Connor, 38-yard fumble recovery, and a Harrison Butker, 51-yarder as time expires, puts the Chiefs ahead 26-25. And what a way to start off the year. Chiefs 2-0, but they're not as good point differential-wise as the Chargers. So Chiefs, technically the number 2 team in the AFC West, but the reigning Super Bowl champions get it done. As for the Bengals, 0-2 to start off the year. Pretty tough losses, too. Cincy, Joe Burrow, 258 yards, 2 touchdowns, played his heart out. Rushing-wise, nothing. Zach Moss, 12 rushes, 34 yards. Mike Gesicki, 7 catches, 91 yards. Isova only had 2 catches for 7 yards. They were both touchdowns. That's a pretty good game, if you ask me. Patty, the baddie, 151 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. Was a no-fly zone. Pacheco, 19 rushes, 90 yards. Travis Kelce, only 1 catch for 5 yards. Rashee Rice, 5 catches, 74 yards for a touchdown. Led the day. Xavier Worthy, only 2 catches, 17 yards. So the Chiefs get it done, sadly. Of course, I picked them to win. I'm going to be picking the Chiefs all year just because they're so friggin' dominant. But the Bengals, I give them some hope. You know, they didn't look as bad as last week against the Patriots game. Joe Burrow always gives Mahomes a run for his money. But, man, you just can't stop him at Arrowhead. Let me tell you that. You just cannot stop these Chiefs at Arrowhead. And with that, guys, we got to our final game of week 2, of course, before Monday Night Football, as the Texans took on the Bears. The Texans getting it done here, moving to 2-0. They win 19-13. As for the Bears, they move to 1-1, third best team in the NFC North. Third worst, actually, depending how you phrase that. DJ Moore, 11 fantasy points. Cairo Santos, 11 fantasy points. Bears offense, just, oh, yikes. Nico Collins, 27.5. Kai Fairbairn, 20. Houston D, 16. It was a kicking fest, a Nico Collins catch fest, and a defensive fest for the Texans. Scoring-wise, we didn't get a touchdown until Nico Collins caught one. Nico Collins caught the first play of the second quarter was a touchdown pass. Incredible. He also had some 50-yarders from both of these teams in the fourth quarter for field goal-wise. Not a lot of scoring. Pretty boring game. Caleb Williams, 174 yards, was better than his 93 last week. He also threw 2 picks. Also rushed 5 times, 44 yards. It has been rough. You know, you really need to be talented to stand out as a rookie. He has not stood out yet. You know, you got so many options. Odunze had 2 catches. Cole Kmet had 4 catches. DJ Moore, 6 catches with Keenan Allen out. TJ Stroud, 260 yards and a touchdown, did pretty decent. Joe Mixon got hurt, which sucks. Nico Collins, 8 catches, 135 yards for a touchdown, was balling. Stephon Diggs, only 4 catches. Tank Dell didn't get a single freaking catch. Wow, did have 3 rushes, 16 yards. Texans, they're favorited. They're supposed to be the Super Bowl contender this year. And the Bears D is the only good thing about this Bears team. So that's pretty much all there is for week 2. We're going to look at some more fantasy-related stuff next time on the podcast. Drop week 3 predictions. But as of right now, I mean, Saints, Buccaneers, Lions, Seahawks, Eagles as of, 3 hours before the game, Texans, Steelers, Chargers, Chiefs, and Bills are all undefeated. What teams will move to 3-0 in week 3, we'll have to see. But my Minnesota Vikings playing pretty good, really making me happy. And there have been a couple entertaining games here and there. I will say there might be a lack of entertainment. The new kickoff format kind of sucks. They call off penalties. The game isn't as physical as before. From what I remember football as a child until now, I don't know if the game's gotten better. But it also just shows the level of talent is really getting better. So that's your week 2 NFL recap. Exciting stuff. I'm excited for this season. It should be fun. It consumes every single one of my Sundays and probably will for the foreseeable future. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into our UFC Noche recap. I've just been itching and scratching, waiting to talk about this. 10 fights went down. We only predicted 3 correctly. Ugh, Zachary, you disgrace. Such an utter disgrace. I apologize, guys. I apologize. We are now sitting at 224 and 149. 224, 149. So I guess we're not terribly, bad on our predictions, but we could have been better. There's a lot of things to say about this card. Let's get right into it. Kicking off the evening, we had a little bantamweight matchup between Raul Rosas Jr. and Errol King? I learned it's not Algonquin. I have no idea why I was pronouncing his name like that. But nailed this prediction. Raul Rosas Jr. getting this one done. It was by unanimous decision. I'll say that for certain is that this, as the competition gets semi-harder, Raul is going to have to be tested. And he couldn't put him away in the first. He tried really hard, right? Damn near 10-8 him. Round number one, if you ask me. 11 significant strikes to 4. 1 of 2 on takedowns. 3 minutes, 13 seconds of control time for Raul Rosas Jr. Almost locking up that rear naked chokehold. And then round 2, 0 of 3 on takedowns. Errol King kept it on the feet using some good distance striking. It was 17 significant strikes to each of them. And I gave him round 2. Now round 3, Raul said, this is not happening. 2 of 2 on takedowns, 4 minutes, 19 seconds of control time. He gets it done, only allowing 1 significant strike to hit him in the final round. Totals, 41 significant strikes to 22, 98 total strikes to 80, 3 of 7 on takedowns, 7.5 minutes of control time, all favoring Raul Rosas Jr. Raul, at 19 years old, improves to 10-1 professionally, currently on a little 3-fight win streak, 4-1 in the UFC. Pretty good now. In his post-fight interview, he did call for a 50K performance bonus and for a ranked opponent. He got neither of those, and he will get neither of those. Raul, lower your expectations. You're still a good fighter, but you are not ready for a ranked opponent yet. As for Errol King, 25-12. He's 31. He's 3-2 with 1 no contest in his last 6 fights now. I don't think he should be cut, but I do think the level of competition he's fighting should go down. One positive I do want to say about the Spheres, the presentation was absolutely amazing. Okay, the presentation looked incredible, looked phenomenal, and pretty much, it's pretty ironic. The first 8 fights, I think, were generally pretty good. This was probably the worst fight out of the prelims. After this, they just got better and better. And out of every fight on the card, Raul Rosas Jr. versus Algonquin was probably the 3rd worst. And that's not really saying much. It was decently entertaining. When it's just not a quick finish, though, there's just not much to be said about that. After that, flyweight matchup, and holy cow, Joshua Van is so impressive. On 4 days' notice, stepping in, taking on Edgar Chiraz, and winning by unanimous decision. So, so incredible. And by the way, I forgot what round it was. It was either round 1 or round 2, but it was pretty much this whole fight. These two wanted to take each other's heads off. This was incredible. Okay, I think it might have been round 2 where Edgar Chiraz was just about damn near out. Lands a spinning elbow right to Joshua Van's face. Joshua Van eats it, continues pushing forward. This was so entertaining. 118 significant strikes to 79 in favor of Joshua Van. 183 total strikes to 87 in favor of Joshua Van. He goes 3 of 3 on takedowns for 4 minutes, 26 seconds of control time. Round 1, Edgar won. 40 significant strikes to 23. Got it done. But then round 2, 71 significant strikes to 28. 2 of 2 on takedowns. Joshua Van had it in his bag. These two are getting a little gassed by round number 3. 24 significant strikes to 11. A takedown for Joshua Van. But keeps it together. Keeps it pushing. I mean, just phenomenal. Just absolutely phenomenal. Joshua Van improves to 11-2, I believe, at his young age of 22. 2-3-1 in the UFC. Get big win here. Only lost now to Charles Johnson. The rankings will soon be calling you Joshua Van. Edgar Cherez falls to 11-6. He's 1-2 in the UFC with a no contest. I think he's entertaining. I hope they keep him. His only losses are now to Tetsuro Taira, who's the number 5 ranked flyweight in the world, and Joshua Van. And Joshua Van just showed he is an absolutely incredible dog here. And he was the favorite for a reason. And he got it done. How about that? I picked the underdog. Didn't work out. I'll tell you, a big underdog that cashed here was Ketlin Souza, +400, as she knocks out Yasmin Jeraguay to get her 9th career knockout. That is right. She has 15 career wins, 9 knockouts now. Ketlin Souza, 2-1 in the UFC, 2-fight winning streak. Impressive here. And Yasmin just got a little ahead of herself. Okay, Yasmin got a little out of herself here, all right? 35 significant strikes to 21 in a 3-minute span, all right? Yasmin was just going forward too much. You could just kind of tell, like, this fight was not going to go the distance. Yasmin left her chin open, got dropped so hard. Ketlin locked up a very tight choke, eventually turned into a rear naked choke, and that was that. Ketlin Souza getting... Oh, wait, she didn't get a knockout. Holy cow, she submitted her. I thought it was a TKO. No, her second career submission, actually, for Ketlin Souza. Only two finishes on the whole card. I will say that was a doozy. Only 2 finishes was an absolute L. But, mind you, of the 2 finishes, Ketlin Souza, 3-minute rear naked choke. I remember. You know, I'm also getting a little bit of that, what do they call it, the Mandela effect? I thought it was a TKO. I stand corrected. Ketlin Souza, impressive stuff there. As for Yasmin Jeraguay, you know, she's definition of live by the sword, die by the sword. You know, she's 3-2 of the UFC. Both of her losses have been in 20 seconds and 3 minutes. In her whole career, actually, that is. She's only 25 years old. Ketlin Souza, 30 years old. These two will probably meet again in the future. These two are so entertaining. This fight was very enjoyable. Great win for Ketlin Souza. And then yet again, we predicted the outcome of a fight incorrectly, as Ignacio Bahomides kind of exposed Manuel Torres here. Drops him twice in 4 minutes to get a round 1 knockout, a round 1 TKO. Ignacio Bahomides, very impressive. That'll be Ignacio's, what is it now, 11th career knockout, 12th career finish. Good win for Ignacio Bahomides. 16-5 record now, 2-fight win streak, 5-1. In his last 6, all of those but 1 coming by knockout or submission. Very impressive for Ignacio. So far 2-0 in 2024. Both of them round 1 knockouts coming at you around the same time. And this was the second performance bonus of the evening. Great work. And I will say this about Manuel Torres. Just left his chin too open. He just kept getting clipped. He got clipped early, and we were kind of like, dang, you know, he got back up, was still fighting, still going forward. But just the knockout landed so clean on the chin, dropped him, and the shots to the ground. Oh my gosh, he immediately covered up, looked so hard. Mark Goddard was like, I'm done, I'm stopping this. And that was that. Ignacio, great win. Manuel, first UFC loss. We probably have the next entertaining fighter here. He has now had 4 fights in the UFC and 1 on Damage Contender Series. They've all ended in round 1. This was the longest fight in the last, I think it was 4 or 5 years for him at 4 minutes. So Manuel Torres, he'll learn from this. And it's pretty funny that all the fighters they just added to UFC 8 Sports 5 lost. I think there's an actual curse going on. I don't really know, but like I said, only 2 finishes on the card. They both happened in round 1. Very impressive stuff here from Ignacio Bahomides. Manuel Torres, I do enjoy you. You will be back. But Ignacio, great win. With that, we got into our final prelim of the night. It was a little top 10 women's bantamweight action for you, as the number 8th ranked Norma Dumont beat the number 5 ranked Irene Aldana. 159 significant strikes to 69 was the tale of the fight, and Irene Aldana suffered one of the nastiest cuts I've ever seen. Her damn face was about to peel off. It was bloody. It was brutal. But just the performance from Norma was beautiful. And it was kind of weird watching it. as the entire fight, the entire 15 minutes this lasted, Irene Aldana was pushing the pace. Irene Aldana was the one having Norma Dumont on her heels, but Norma Dumont was just striking as she's going back. Land two more, keep backing up. Land two more, keep backing up. It just added up, and she got better as the fight went along. I kid you not, 32 significant strikes to 12 round one, 58 to 25 round two, 69 to 32 round three. Norma Dumont is truly a well-rounded fighter. 30-27, her incredible work here. Norma Dumont, five-fight winning streak, 8-2 in the UFC, 8-1 since November of 2020. Hasn't lost since May of 2022. That was a split decision. I mean, she's looked incredible. And last fight against Jermaine Duranemi in April showed her grappling. Six takedowns the entire fight, controlled the entire fight. This fight showed off the striking. And now Norma is going to be ranked number five. Look, you got Caitlin Vieira and Kayla Harrison, the number two and number three women in the women's bantamweight division fighting. You got Julia Pena taking on Raquel Pennington. Macy Chison is right there at number four. That was the last woman to beat her. That's your fight. Winner of that, I give the title shot after Kayla Harrison and Caitlin Vieira. That's honestly what I was doing. I think the women's bantamweight has its next three title fights lined up. Of course, Raquel Pennington, Julia Pena. We do not need a trilogy or anything there. Let's just accept that. Then the winner of Caitlin Vieira and Kayla Harrison. Then the winner of Macy Chison and Norma Dumont. Very happy with that. Irene Aldana, I think her versus Mara Bueno Silva is the perfect fight to make. I even run back Irene Aldana and Carol Rosa. Great work there. This was an entertaining fight to see as Norma Dumont just bloodied. The bloodiest fight of the night. Good, did what needed to do. Norma Dumont, a star was born. And as we reached this point of the card, it was pretty evident that Mexico is not having a good night. Edgar Cerez loses a decision, almost finished. Yasmin Jerguay gets finished. Manuel Torres gets finished. Irene Aldana gets her face bloodied. And Raul Russell Jr. had been the only Mexican fighter to win. You know, it was looking kind of bleak. And then who steps in to save the day? None other than Lazy Boy Ronaldo Rodriguez, the biggest stud from the press conference for UFC 306. And you know what? He almost got finished in round one, but the kid comes back, pulls it together, and wins 29-27 across the judges' scorecards. 10-8 at O'Day in round number two. Impressive stuff. 37 significant strikes to 35 for O'Day Osborne and Kalina. Knockdown. Both men landed a takedown, but 9 minutes, 14 seconds control time to Ronaldo Rodriguez. Ronaldo improving to 17-2. He's also on a 2-fight winning streak. I believe, is it more? Ronaldo Rodriguez might be on a little bit more. Yeah, he's on a 7-fight win streak now. My bad. O'Day Osborne, tough loss here now on a 3-fight losing streak. But he didn't look too bad in this one. Should this have been the main card? No, but Ronaldo Rodriguez's personality made up for it. Plus, he was super happy when he won. Tail of this fight, O'Day knocks him out almost in round number one. And then Ronaldo is somehow able to reverse after getting knocked down and get 4 minutes and 14 seconds control time. It's pretty much O'Day dropped him, and O'Day reversed him. It's like, I'm just going to hold him here. We go into round two. Ronaldo wasted no time. Took him now 4 minutes and 10 seconds. O'Day was trying to throw up some submissions. Landed a quick reverse before it kind of failed. And then round three, O'Day landed a takedown. Almost was able to pull it together, but Ronaldo was able to just kind of land the bigger-looking strikes in this and got it done. So Ronaldo Rodriguez getting the win here. It's not going to win fight of the night. It's not going to win worst fight of the night. It just exists. Ronaldo Rodriguez, welcome to the flyweight division. I don't think he's getting a ranked opponent. I know some people are thinking Matt Schnell, maybe Cody Durden or, you know, one of those guys, but I don't think that's going to happen. Ronaldo, you know, good stuff. O'Day, I don't know if you're going to be sticking around, if I'm being honest. But Mexico got its, I guess, technically last win. I don't really know what we consider Diego Lopez. He's a Brazilian fighter fighting out of Mexico. But this was the final actual Mexican fighter getting a win. Because in the next fight, the fight of the night, damn near, I think it's fight of the year, guys. It might be fight of the year. This was one of the greatest fights I got to witness. Daniel Zaluber, Esteban Ribavix. Talk about two guys who just showed what human spirit is, showed what drive is, okay? This was insane, and it got better as it went along, okay? Split decision win goes to Esteban Ribavix. Good win. Good win, Esteban. 14-1, 3-fight winning streak, 2-0 in 2024. Great win. Daniel Zaluber, your first loss since 2022, snaps 3-fight winning streak, but back-to-back fight of the nights now in 2024. This one didn't go your way. I would not be too mad. Finals from the fight, a knockdown for Daniel Zaluber, 121 significant strikes for Daniel, 156 for Esteban, 0-1 takedowns for Zaluber. These two are just swinging until the final moments. And here we go. Let me hit you with it. Daniel Zuber, I'll strike some 27-24 in round one. Okay, very competitive. Very competitive. Zuber again in round two, 51 significant strikes of 40. But then Esteban Ribovic, 92 significant strikes of 43, ending the fight with a bang, almost gets knocked out, almost knocked Daniel Zuber out on the feet. I mean, this was just bonkers. I mean, Zuber was bouncing around the whole cage, bouncing off against the wall, getting clipped. Everyone was like, are they going to stop this? Is Jason Herzog going to stop this? And he didn't. And these two just went to the buzzer. And Daniel Zuber, I'm such a huge fan of you. Esteban Ribovic, I am such a huge fan of you. The lightweight division is it good hands, boys. Let me just tell you that. Fight of the night. Damn near fight of the year. If they give it to Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje, I won't be mad. But put this up there for fight of the year contender. Mark my words. This was immaculate. I'm sorry. I just hit the microphone. I'm absolutely getting all jonesed up for this. This was so much fun to witness. I had it was just such a great time. So Daniel Zuber, Esteban Ribovic, fight of the night, fight of the year. Incredible. After that, all right, we got into what most people considered like the actual UFC 306. So the three biggest fights of the night, and it was Diego Lopez versus Brian Ortega. And I'll say this, you know, Diego Lopez, all right, he hits like a truck, okay? He brings it to you like a truck. And Brian Ortega is just the most durable mofo that I've ever seen. Just ate all of his punches, didn't actually ever get officially knocked down, only got taken down once in round one. I won't lie, he did get outstruck every round. 29-15 round one, 22-16 round two, 55-32, almost got knocked out, 30-26 round in there. But man, Brian Ortega almost finished in the first minute and 30 seconds, but managed to survive, his chin held in there. But Diego Lopez, man, such a killer. 5-fight winning streak now in the UFC. And he's the number three featherweight in the world. Diego Lopez, a year ago, was just another average Joe, unranked, and now he's the number three featherweight in the world. He's above Yair Rodriguez, Arnold Allen, Moshe Rabov, Josh Emmett, Aljamain Sterling, Calvin Kerr, Giga Chikadze. It's incredible. There's incredible. There's only two men ahead of him, Max Holloway, Alexander Volkanovski, in the rankings. Diego, absolutely amazing in this one. Ortega, you know, he's 1-3 in his last four. This was a tough loss. This was kind of an eye-opener for him. You know, he said he's moving to lightweight, so Brian Ortega's days at featherweight are done. Who could he fight at lightweight? You know, Matheus Skhermat just lost. Beneil Dariush is open. There's always Jalen Turner, Paddy Pimblett. I don't know. All I'm going to say is that Diego Lopez, I want to give him a title shot, man. This dude is just insane. He's got the personality, the power. He was trying to finish Ortega this entire fight, and he almost did it. It's just Ortega's chin is outerworldly. Diego Lopez, you're a stud. We nailed our prediction here that he would win. I honestly, you know, he almost knocked him out in round number one. It's crazy. He actually knocked him out on the feet, and as he was falling to him with another punch that woke him up. It was crazy to see on the replay, so great win there. This was the final good fight of the night. It was the final good fight of the night. And that's not me knocking Mirab Dvalishvili and Valentina Shevchenko. That is not me knocking them. I'm just pointing out the obvious. These fights are boring. I know people saying you're not a real MMA fan if you don't enjoy a lot of grappling. Well, I don't enjoy when a championship fight built up for months is just one guy grappling the other guy. And for Valentina Shevchenko versus Alexa Grasso, it was 100 times worse. I was almost confused how Alexa Grasso ever won the championship. I have no idea. Alexa Grasso, currently the number one woman, pound for pound in the rankings. No, she's booted. Valentina Shevchenko, your new women's flyweight champion, your new pound for pound woman in the UFC, I guess in the world, if you want to say it. Yeah, she 50-45s. Alexa Grasso, that's all it was. Total from the fight, 45 significant strikes to 18. 193 total strikes, 153. They are all little taps. 8 takedowns, 16 minutes of control time. 8 minutes, 16 minutes of control time. Insane. 3 minutes, 28 seconds, round 1. 3 minutes, 57 seconds, round 2. 2 minutes, 20 seconds, round 3. 3 minutes, 56 seconds, round 4. 2 minutes, 23 seconds of round number 5. It was honestly Valentina Shevchenko taking her down every single round, trying to advance position. Alexa Grasso threw up an attempt to get a guillotine and a rear naked choke in round 2 and 4, trying to throw up some arm triangles, some arm bars here and there, but just nothing. And the significant strikes, the most Alexa Grasso ever had in a round was 8. She had one where she had one where she had two, one where she had two, and one where she had 5. It was brutal to watch. Valentina doing what she needed to do, but didn't really win any new fans. 24-4 record for her now. She's the champion again, 2-time women's flyweight champion. I don't even know. you know, Manafiorot's next for her. There's that. Alexa Grasso, I think you versus Natalia Silva. Or Macy Barber is going to be the next fight to make. But there's really not much to say here. Valentina Shevchenko took her down every round and just held her in control position. It was boring, and I walked home from the bars Saturday night watching this on my phone, and I was like, oh, I hope I make it home before the Sean O'Malley fight, and I did. That's how long this fight felt like it took, so there was that. And then we got to the main event, and obviously I picked Alexa Grasso and Alexa Grasso and Sean O'Malley to win, so I was sad they lost, but it's the fact they lost in such boring fashion. Rob Dovizioso, I have no idea how this was a 48-47, 48-47, and 49-46 on the judges' scorecard. That's abysmal. This was a 50-45 for Moab Dovizioso. This was a 50-45. He gets it done. Beats the number 6 pound-for-pound guy in the world. He'll probably rank 6th, 7th, 8th. I don't know, but Merab, your new men's bantamweight champion. Tail of the fight, 82 significant strikes of 47, 6 of 15 on takedowns, 10 minutes of control time, another grappling fest. This one was honestly worse, as I never saw Sean O'Malley attempt to finish Merab in this fight. I really didn't. It didn't look like he wanted to be in there. And this fight was kind of weird. It started off weird where Tim Walsh was like talking to Merab right as the fight started. Merab wasn't even looking at Sean O'Malley. There was also a moment where Merab had him in like a guillotine position. He started kissing his back. Then he got it with 4 seconds left, and O'Malley threw a shot at him. It might hit the back of his head. It was so weird, but I mean, totals from the fight, Merab outstruck him in every round but round 5, where Sean O'Malley had 11 significant strikes to 10. Takedowns, 2 in round 1, 1 in round 2. Maybe Sean O'Malley might have won round 5, defended 5 takedowns. Merab landed 1 in round 4 and went dialed it up 2 of 5 in round 5. Just did what he needed to do. Sean O'Malley just had no answer for anything Merab did. He had no takedown defense. You know, he defended 9, but those 9 were more just lesser takedowns. I mean, every time he landed a takedown, it was a double leg, picked him up off the ground, got him down. That was that. And Rob Dovizioso, 11 fight win streak now, which is absolutely incredible. 2-0 now in 2024, your new men's bantamweight champion. Sean O'Malley suffering his second career defeat. Kind of felt like his first official defeat, though. You know, looking back to the Marlon Vera fight, you know, he got injured in that fight. This one, it was like just all 5 rounds dominated. And that was that. The cash cow goes down. It hurts, but, you know, that's just how it goes. Merab Dovizioso, an absolute killer. He'll have to take on Umar Nurmagomedov at some point. He's already trying to say that Deiveson Figueiredo should get the title fight, so he's already tried to duck Umar Nurmagomedov. That'll be an entertaining fight. Sean O'Malley versus Corey Sandhagen will be the next fight. Those both just seem damn near confirmed by just obviousness of the rankings. Yeah. That's all. That was all. And the Sphere, you know, so there were some highs. The highs were the production. It looked cool. It looked cool. That's all I'll say. I'll say some negatives. You know, I hate to point out the negatives over the positives, but I mean, at the end of the day, boring title fights, only 2 finishes. Dana White wasn't happy about that, and it was long. Okay, this started at 6:30. It didn't end till 1 in the morning. That is a long time to be watching a UFC event. Also, it was expensive. I didn't even pay for this. Thankfully, some of my friends were watching it, and I was able to come in and catch it. I mean, the prelims were free on ESPN, but as to the main card, would not have been worth it. You know, you really have to weigh if you get your money's worth, and I didn't pay for it, and I would not have felt I got my money's worth, so there's that. But UFC 306 wasn't the worst of the year, wasn't the best. Some interesting stuff. Congratulations, Valentina Shevchenko, 2-time champion. Merab, your new men's bantamweight champion. He's earned it. Diego Lopez, a star is born. Esmar Mijovic, Daniel Zuber, fight of the year. Raul Rodriguez, one of my favorite personalities. Norma Dumont, welcome to the top 5 of women's bantamweight. Ignacio Bahomanez, proven he still has knockout power. Kentlyn Souza, keeping the women's strawweight division on watch. Josh Van, absolute killer at flyweight. And Raul Russos Jr., mind you, 3-fight winning streak, 10-1 at 19 years old. He is going to be in the UFC for a long time. Exciting stuff all around. That's all we got, guys. That's all we got for today's episode. Nice little run-of-the-mill recap of UFC 306. We look ahead to UFC Paris, UFC 307, UFC Edmonton, UFC Madison Square Garden, UFC Abu Dhabi. There are so many more fun UFC events coming at you later this year. I'm looking to find some more guest speakers. I'm debating asking certain people I know to come on. I don't know how entertaining they would be, how controversial they would be, but we'll have to see. That's all I got for today, guys. I just want to hit you with a quote, all right? And we're going to try and end some of these episodes with quotes from now on, just because I enjoy quotes. And this really hit me. And this is how we're going to end today's episode. So, an athlete won't judge you for working out. A millionaire won't judge you for starting a business. A musician won't judge you for trying to sing a song. It's always the people going nowhere who have something to say to you. Think about that. It's usually the people going nowhere who like to critique you. The people already there, they want you to be up there with them. They aren't going to give you handouts. They want you to figure out your own way. So that was my unknown. You know, I read that quote today and I was like, damn, that hits pretty hard. So guys, knock them dead this week. Have an amazing month. Let's end it out on a great bang. And by the way, hey, if you didn't know, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.